Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host from Coins Plus, the sponsor. Coins Plus is your full service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. Always buying and selling pretty much any form of precious metal you can imagine, in any form it comes in. Gold, silver, platinum, palladium, coins, jewelry, diamonds. We deal in all of it. I will say that we've been doing this for a couple decades. I've explained that a few times. It's important to us to let you know that we are here to help you. We have been in an industry that I think has remained rock solid over time. They say the longest financial bull market in history is the precious metals since they were deregulated in 1971, which is 47 years ago. That's quite a while ago for some of us. For others of us, I suppose not so much. Who knows? But you do the math, and it's kind of funny how you get blips and spikes in the market, and so we get real powerful rallies in the precious metals-based markets, and then the income stream is insane, and then it'll just kind of creep up, it'll plateau, flatline, creep up. It's probably gone up 20% in the last couple of years or something, or maybe not even that, maybe 15, and people get critical of it. But the thing is, folks, I mean, the markets, they do balance themselves out. They do need to adjust. That's a no-brainer. And I'll admit, I've been doing this a while, and I get caught up in hype. When I go back to, the dot-com craze of the 90s, which is very similar in a way to what's going on now, sort of with Trump, with this Trump market. The only difference was the dot-com craze, which was a casino market frenzy of the 90s, was hypothetically driven by technology, okay? Hypothetically, I say, because if you know much about IPOs, IPOs were initial public offerings. This was the heroin of the dot-com craze market, if you understand what I mean by that. They were looking, begging, digging, pleading for IPOs. Any stock they could say, hey, look at this new stock, jump in on the ground floor, make all this money, and then jump out. You may have seen all the IPO scams that took place. It was unbelievable. I mean, and it also brings up why the current stock market craze is also a frenzy. It's also a scam. And what, I guess I'll keep it simple. Yeah, I always say that, right? I have a friend I was talking to the other night, and I said, well, long story short, and he's like, yeah, we kind of talked about, that's one of my favorite sayings that I think is probably not always true. I'm not very good at making long stories short. So when you go back to the dot-com craze of the 90s, you had anything at all that they could pour money into, they would go after. What was going on was people get crazy. People want to put their money somewhere. They want to make money. They want to make a profit. They want a good experience. They want to keep up with inflation. I don't know exactly how to put it, but folks, there's a lot of money out there. I've discussed, the concept of fly across America and look down at all the houses and all the land and think of the value of all the houses and all the land in America. When you think the average home price across America is probably $250,000 at least, and I mean, it's probably way more than that. It depends on whether or not you add in the 100,000-acre ranches in Montana and Texas or whatever. But, you know, houses in general, $250,000. Well, actually, no, you know what? That's wrong. The at least for sales prices, the average home sales price for 2017 broke $300,000 for the first time, and pretty handily. So it was like $313,000. So for 2017, the average home sales price was like $313,000. And then you add on top of that that there's probably, you know, I don't know the math, but there's a lot of homes out there. We could do that all day. But you know, there's probably 30, 40 million homes. And if you had 40 million homes, here we go. I got my calculator. There's 40 million. And we try to multiply that times 250,000. Let's see what we get. Or no, I did that wrong. It's 300,000, isn't it? And it's going to give me a bunch of zeros. 1.2 times 10 to the 13th power. 13 zeros. That's in the holy smokes range. That's it's in the $120 trillion. $120 trillion, just as an estimate of the value of homes in America, okay? And then add in ranches and commercial property. And on you go. And I mean, you start to get into some serious numbers, you know. It's like they say, the politician says, you know, you spend $10 billion here and $10 billion there and $10 billion there. And he said, pretty soon you're starting to talk about some pretty serious money, which is a joke if you don't get it. But that's the way politics works. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of wealth out there. And then we have wealth overseas and money and so people want something to do with it. So the dot-com craze was an absolute frenzy. Here's something. This is the Kevin-only theory. But you have to understand that not only did we see a massive collapse of that market, and I think you'd all agree, we also got to witness 9/11. Now, I'm one of these crazy, whacked out conspiracy nuts that thinks that there are far, far, far too many reasons that, how would I put it? I think there's far too many suspicious, unanswered questions around 9/11 that I don't think it is what it appeared to be. I don't think it's that simple. I didn't really want to do a show on 9/11 today, and I'm not going to, but trust me, when you stack up all the facts and all the questions and all the timing and all the laws and, you know, the whatever they were, People for a New American Century, that basically orchestrated and designed exactly that which happened, include Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and all those that were involved, all these powerful leaders that, you know, really are not dyed in the wool, red, white, and blue conservative Americans just because they're in the Republican Party. When I grew up, you know, a Republican was a Republican. And it meant that they believed in low spending and controlled budgeting and things like that. The difference between a Republican and a Democrat should be, right now, the difference between hard assets and fiat currency. Okay. We are on a runaway train of fiat currency. Our current stock market, folks, our current economy is nuts. What is driving it? I mean, I want you to think about this. What is driving it? What was driving the market in the 90s during the dot-com craze? Now, two things. One was IPOs or tech stocks, right? But everything was tech this, tech that. And also real estate. How did the real estate boom happen? The way it happened was we gave away tons of debt. On a fiat currency system, everything is debt. Everything. Every last penny in existence is created by debt. Folks, it is so hard to explain in a rational, understandable way because it is so counterintuitive and so unreasonable and so ridiculous that people cannot comprehend the fiat currency system. I mean, I know how it works. I wouldn't even say that. I've studied the whole program. I've studied all of it, Keynesian economics. I've studied economics, as you know, at graduate levels, and it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense. The only thing is, it is what it is. What's craziest of all is the fact that we are adopting socialistic mannerisms and tendencies in this nation in every way, shape, and form imaginable. We are adopting a police state in way, way bad ways. You probably saw today where, you know, one police officer was fired and the other was suspended in the shooting of the guy. And, you know, and there's way too much of that going on. I understand, you know, the streets can be a tough place. I understand the rules. If a police officer tells you to do something, you do it. That's the way I was raised. But I also understand that police can lose their humanity. And I do believe that happens. I believe that they lose their humanity. They get treated a certain way. And what happens is they let that poison get to them. And the truth is, I'm sure I'm not a police officer, but I have a relative who is, and a good friend who is, a number of good friends who are, actually. And most of them have really good attitudes. And I think a lot of them take the attitude that, you know, they're not going to complain about anything because no one would really care anyway, is, I think, kind of the approach. It is a fraternal order of brethren, and what I mean by that is a tight-knit group that are loyal to one another, and they do think, realize, understand that other people don't get it. They just don't get it, and I'm not going to sit here and say I do. But I will tell you, as a believer, when you're being fed that kind of poison, in other words, I'm sure police, you know, they get all kinds of treatment that's negative and, you know, and whatnot, and they don't get a lot of thanks for a lot of good things they do. You do get the egomaniacs, cops, of course, they're just really difficult to deal with. They become very cold and impersonal, or they shouldn't have been there in the first place. The fact of the matter is, what most people think makes a good cop is exactly what makes a bad cop. People think the best cop is a guy who just executes the law no matter what, doesn't care about you, doesn't care about people, just his job is just the law, you know. That actual personality has been proven to be, hands down, the most dangerous because we are human beings. And I think what's happening is actually human beings created by God with a heck of a good brain, right? And what's happening is more and more we're trying to make every position more and more robotic. You show up, you do this, this is your job, this is what you do. If you're a good boy or a good girl long enough, you'll get a little raise or you'll get a promotion or whatever. We are not teaching our kids in school, whether it's elementary school, high school, college, whatever. We are not teaching them how to think. We are teaching them what to think. And that was what I was just getting at, is the best police officer is a police officer who knows how to think and can control his emotions. I don't care what, you know, whether you're a believer or not. Being a believer is a lot different, but there's a certain level of standards. It used to be that, you know, there was a certain standard of professionalism that was universal. I'm not saying just with police officers, I'm saying in life. There was a certain level of ethics and respect and kindness and dignity and all that that everyone agreed upon. It was never debatable, you know, whether being a gentleman or opening a door for a lady was okay. I actually had a black lady, and of course you're not even supposed to ever refer to anyone's skin color anymore unless they do or whatever. I don't know all the rules. When I was out in Seattle, I opened a door for her in a very nice hotel, and she got angry with me and said, I can open my own door for myself. Thank you very much. And she stood there, and I held it, and I waited, and she said, would you please get your hand off the door so I can open it for myself? And I was like, wow. I mean, I never thought I'd saw that day. I'm always the guy that holds the door open for everybody when we're going in and out of places. It's just polite. And if there's any kids or young people, young men listening to the show, it is super critical that you become a man of integrity. Have initiative. Jump up, you know, be the first one to jump up when you get asked to do something. Don't sit there and lollygag around and look at your little electronic device or whatever. Don't put your text above your parents' requests. You know, this texting stuff is getting nuts. People who know me know that I prefer texting over email. I've talked to a few people that prefer email. I don't get, not on a cell phone. That I don't get. How in the world can you keep track of emails on a cell phone? I don't get it. I just get tired of it. But I suppose it has a lot to do with the fact that I get a bunch of junk emails in our computer text service. You know, they've got a variety of spam programs that, you know, they're impossible to use because you can't, like, eliminate, you can't block somebody from 8 different devices, and it's just not my favorite thing. So basically, when you go, the stock market of the 90s was driven by real estate, which was debt. All currency is debt, okay? And the and IPOs, which again was debt. So what was happening was we have, in addition to the debt and the deficit I discussed on Wednesday, we have what are called margin accounts. Margin accounts are where people can borrow against their savings or their investments or whatever. In other words, you can only borrow the money to buy more stock. So if you have $100,000 in a portfolio, we'll say it, Charles Schwab, just picking a name because it's out there. If you have $100,000 there, depending on what you want to invest in, they will loan you, you know, 40 or 50% of that to go buy more stock. or more, whatever. And a lot of times what happens when people are buying metals, they buy precious metals with or on margin accounts, okay? So what it means is you have $100,000 sitting in a Schwab account. And I, like I said, I don't care if it's Schwab or, you know, whatever, E-Trade or whatever it is. That's not the point. The point is that if you have this account, then they allow you to take up like 40 or 50% more and go buy more of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So you, even though you have $100,000, you could be leveraging $150,000. The problem is on that extra $50,000 that you've taken out on margin, you're paying interest, okay? So what happens is, how big does the market get, okay? If you know, and there is, I don't even know what percentage of investments are on margin accounts. I couldn't begin to tell you, but I would bet you that it is far higher than you would expect. I would bet you a lot of money. It is a very high percentage. I'll bet you that the percentage of investments, I'm going to look it up, on margin are, I'd say, 20%. Let's see what the thing is here. 28%. I'm looking at a number here that says 28%. So 28% of the stock market is on margin. That and then what happens is when a stock goes down a certain amount, so let's say you have 100 grand and you've leveraged 50 grand of it for margin, which is now you have a $50,000 loan against a $100,000 investment package portfolio at Schwab or E-Trade or wherever. And then when those stocks come down, they will not allow your margin to go above a certain percentage. So if the stocks that you own in your basic investment portfolio drop by like 6 or 7% in a day, that means that your margin amount loan has now exceeded their maximum percentages. And they don't just sell off a little bit of the stock or metal futures at a time, they dump it all. And so here's what's going on. Number one, when you see these weird dump days, like people are always going, why when the stock market goes down do I see metals drop so fast? They say, isn't it supposed to be the opposite? Well, yes, it is supposed to be the opposite if you weren't in a fiat currency system, if you were in a real system. But in our system that is fully debt-driven, that's exactly what you're going to see. Because when the market begins to come down, it calls those margins in and forces a sale of all those holdings, which in turn drops the value of those items, which in turn triggers other people's accounts to go down low enough that they've got margin calls coming, etc. And then you start a merry-go-round, or you know, you start an absolute crash, you whatever you want to call it, a frenzy or a crash or whatever. It is all smoke and mirrors. What I was getting at today is the fact that we had the big market in the 90s, real hyperinflated, just crazy inflated. But one thing, folks, you got to keep in mind, people, this is one of the more interesting aspects of the human mind and human nature. The dot-com craze only lasted a few years. I mean, it really only lasted but a very few years. If you really you know, look at the historical Dow Jones industrial graphs you'll see that it went up fast and it came down fast. And I will tell you, it was not the memories of those who, you know, maybe because of age or whatever, got in when they did. The dot-com craze basically started with the Dow, I'm looking here, in the 90s, you know, down in the, well, you know, 5,000 range, 4 to 5. It shot up to 10 or 11 and then came crashing all the way back down to 7. And all that took place within about a 4 or 5 year period of time. The real dot-com craze, where it went from 4,000 to a peak of 11,000, all took place between basically, between roughly from January 95 to January 2000. So five years. So that market, people act like the market did so well for so long. And then we went into this crazy bear market where we went all the way back down in the sixes just 5-6 years ago. And now we're up, you know, we're getting up into the 20 stuff range. And so what drove that dot-com craze was nothing, folks, but hype. That's what you've got to realize. Our market is driven strictly by emotion. You know, when you study economics, like I have, they tell you point blank, straight up, the power of an economy or the health of an economy is strictly a reflection of the people's attitude toward that economy. So, in other words, if you think you have a good economy, you do. Because you behave like you do. It would be like if I told you, here's an example, kind of ridiculous, but, you know, when people win the lottery, they start spending money. And if they have a monthly payout that they think they're going to get, they start spending the money. Well, what if that payout stopped? That's what's crazy about these lotteries when people take a 20 or 30 year payout. They don't know financial history. They don't know what municipal bankruptcy looks like. Throughout history, we have had countless bankruptcies of entire cities, entire states, and governments. Now, our government is unique that we haven't filed like bankruptcy ever, but we've had some rough, rocky, tough times. So the dot-com craze of the 90s, it was all hype. Just understand that. Follow that for me, because I'm taking you somewhere on this little journey. And believe me, I'm getting as tired of this raspy sounding throat as you are. But, you know, so we had this dot-com craze, little frenzy that we went on, this little train ride. And it was based on absolutely nothing, literally nothing. And I'm being sincere. Looking back, I can't think of anything other than the hope and promise of tech stocks. And what really drove it, one area that really gets overlooked is the influx of overseas money. We had a massive influx of overseas money that actually was putting us in a position where we could have become debt-free had we chosen to be. Had we set our minds to it and decided this is who we want to be, we could have done it. We could have gone off the fiat currency Keynesian economic system and jumped onto a gold standard or whatever. And at this point in time, if we would have ever done that, which you can't, John F. Kennedy tried. He had an executive order ready to go to abolish the Fed. And we know what happened to John F. Kennedy. He is right now buried at Arlington. He was executed for his beliefs. He was executed, in my opinion, clearly because he was going to abolish the Federal Reserve. That's the fate of those that truly come up against those who are in power. So basically, we're sitting in a position now where we live and die by this currency rage. Everyone plays by the game. We go back to the 90s, like I said. Everything was hype. Everything was debt. Everything was fake. Everything was air. And like I said, we had the money to abolish the Fed, to be out of this mess, to stand on our own 2 feet, but we did not then, nor would we now do that. And And that it would be very simple to do. Now we're done. I mean, now we can't do it because the debt's so crazy. But we're producing cash at a level you can't even imagine. Okay, so where I'm going with this is, now we talked about what, you know, what drove the markets in the 90s, okay, which is what? Nothing. Just air, hype, excitement, you know, whatever word you want to come up with. Perception, whatever. Economics is based on the will of the people. If you think you're going to do well, you'll behave like it, you'll spend it. If you think the economy is going to get better, you'll go buy a house and finance it. Now, what's going on now? We're getting a little uptick in the interest rates coming now. And if you haven't refined your house, I don't know, you may be too late. But I will tell you, it needs to be done because hyperinflation's coming. So what's going on right now is we've got this hyper overinflated market. We are really, really pumping it up. I mean, we are pumping it up. I'll just put it that way. Part of me is appalled that Trump signed this recent budget for $1.3 trillion without looking at or reading anything in it, nothing. And he said, well, the reason was that what it offered for the military was just too good, he couldn't pass it up. Is that fiscal responsibility? I don't think so. Trump did stand and criticize the spending mess that we were in when he was campaigning. But I did notice as he got closer and closer to the end, he discussed it less and less and less. My theory is a couple, you know, people probably got to him. And what I mean is, you don't threaten Donald Trump, I don't think. But I think big power bankers got to him. They impressed him. They blew his mind. You know, they basically said, don't mess with this thing, it'll tip over. Which is what George Bush Jr. said when he gave his speech for the first big TARP fund. For the first big bailout, he said, look, I've always been taught to be a free market guy. I've got all these experts surrounding me telling me if I don't do this now, the economy of the whole world's going to come to a crashing halt and so on and so forth. Back then, our budget deficit was around $3.5 trillion, maybe. I mean, think of that. Now we're 21 plus trillion. You think we might be on a little bit of a runaway train? I think so. And so what I'm getting at is, what, even though the market is floundering now, it's bouncing heavily, it will not last. it is driven strictly by hype and innuendo. It is driven by people's hope that everything's going to be great. Donald Trump, a businessman's in office. Yippee, yippee. But the biggest problem is the Fed is still creating money like you can't believe. Folks, we've gotten to a point in this country where I promise you, our founders would absolutely roll over in their grave. Okay? First of all, if you said, well, they weren't as smart as we are, you know. They prescribed a gold and silver standard because that's all they knew. And I would say, okay, all right, well, let's look at that. Let's think for a minute. Well, you know, our founders, they didn't know about fiat currency. They could have never thought of it. Okay, really? You think that they weren't? Now, our founders were incredible scholars, incredible. How many leaders throughout history do you think that have tried to run a fiat currency scam? In other words, say, here's my monopoly money. Could you give me your real money, please? And we're going to trade because everybody here has agreed to play my with my monopoly money and to say my monopoly money is the best stuff around. And if anyone counterfeits my if anyone makes anything, including something that looks like my monopoly money or something that is purported to be wealth, and by the way, at the time they chose the word dollar. So if anybody makes anything that has the word dollar on it, or if it could be confused as an American coin or piece of paper, they're instantly charged with fraud or a counterfeiting. So if you take, you know, little pieces of silver and break them into little $1 chunks, you can do that until you stamp on the front $1 or, you know, or a U.S. Mint $1 or whatever. The minute you do that, you've broken all the codes. Donald Trump is, when it comes to his financial behavior, Donald Trump is not a conservative. He is a populist. The reason he signed this insane bill without reading it is because he doesn't think about the debt, apparently. He's spent a huge amount of his life as a businessman. He looks at things from a balance sheet perspective. In other words, he looks at things and says, well, what's our net worth and all that, which is what banks do. But you don't, when you're talking about cash and inflation and people's real income and their real wealth, you just don't mess with that. Okay. Donald Trump has shown us recently, in my opinion, or confirmed, I should say. Donald Trump has confirmed that he is not a conservative, that he is a progressive. Many respected conservative leaders had said so. When people compare him to Reagan, there are little bits and pieces that are true. When they say he's Reagan-esque, I don't totally disagree. The reason I don't totally disagree is because Reagan was a populist too. Reagan was pretty bright on free market enterprise. I'm not so sure. You know, it's hard to know where Trump really stands on things because when he talks, he just talks. Now, understand, there's a difference between being for something and being against something. Donald Trump is against a lot, right? He'll stand up and he'll run people down and he'll be against this and against that. And I'm, you know, and granted, people are going to be like, I thought you liked Trump. Well, I was sure happy when he got elected over Hillary. That was exciting. And I think just as we all do when we see a certain candidate get elected, we hope that we are at the end of the line, and we hope that we're going to turn directions and we're going to start doing better again. And I will admit, I thought, I really believed that. I believed that Donald Trump was going to do more for our finances than he has. This new budget bill, folks, just tells you we are on the runaway train. It has not stopped. It is accelerating. There is no end in sight, okay? It's not going to change. It's not going to end. It's the bottom line is you just need to do the right thing with your own finances. You cannot get caught up in the hype and frenzy of a booming stock market. Don't do it. This is the time that you get out, folks. This is the time you get out. This is the time you get out. If your market's money's up, you know, whatever, get out, stay out. If you have, if you're with the government, like a guy I talked to the other day, believe it or not, who had over $1 million in his government, like 401k pension plan or whatever. I mean, wow, that's a lot of money. I told him, I said, dude, I would get 80% of that out. He's got them in, they've got him in high risk stocks. And he's in his mid-50s. And high risk means it can go up, it can go down, and it will. And so you need to just protect yourself. You need to be careful. You need to be wise. You need to be conservative. You know, you just really need to use your head right when you're playing with these things. If you want to invest in any of them, you need to know what you're doing, or you'll just get slapped around, and when you're finally done, you'll have a core, you know, 25 or 30% less than you started with, or more, depending on how long you play the game. So, God in the Bible, if you believe that God wrote the Bible, if you believe that all Scripture is inspired. And if you know that pretty much throughout all of history, the Bible's never been proven wrong, it's always proven itself right over and over and over again and again and again and again. Once you realize that, you start to take the book a little bit serious, and you start to realize that God made a simple system. Now, when God makes something, it has value. If man makes something, it can have value, but it isn't guaranteed to, okay? You can have 50 different artists paint a picture. And you can say, paint this picture of this mountain range and these deer. And every one of them is going to look a little bit different, and you might have one painter who's famous, and he may his painting may be worth $15,000, and it may be the worst one there, all the way down to a guy whose painting is abstract and bizarre, and, you know, or vice versa, or to somebody whose painting is incredible, but their name's not well known, it might be worth $50. So the thing is, even though we can create wealth, it's not guaranteed that we do. So it's important to understand what God made, gold, silver, those items that are biblically attributed as true wealth that the Bible tells us, gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones. Those are the things that just last, whether you like them or not, whether your broker buddy agrees or not. It doesn't matter. It's a fact. And by the way, folks, I got to jump off the rails here. If you want to do the right thing, I believe God has a system that's very simple. He knows that we all live 70 or 80 years on average. Some of you will outdo that, but that's about average. He knows that precious metals-based assets always perform and always prevail. I mean, no matter what happens, it's like when things are, quote, going good, okay, like they supposedly are in our country right now, we get caught up in it. We don't think ahead. We always think everything's going to be fine forever. I even started to talk a little earlier on the show. We had let the dot-com craze get so messy that I don't believe the timing of 9/11, that's in September 11th of 2001, that brought the trade towers down. I don't believe that was an accident. I believe that was fully orchestrated and timed. Yes, I believe there's, you know, terrorists that were involved and believe they were flying the planes. Go look online at even the underbelly pictures of the planes as they were going into the building and compare them to the American Airlines flights that were supposedly flying that day or ever. They just don't exist like that. They had these huge underbellies packed with something, and there's just a lot of, that's just one minor out of thousands of details. But the timing was too important. The IRS was auditing all these companies for cooking the books, over 100 companies after they took down Enron. The IRS and FBI was investigating them all. And then suddenly 9/11 put all that to rest. If people are doing that stuff on purpose, then let them reap what they sow, I guess, on the day of judgment or before. But, you know, the bottom line is, folks, where we're at right now, it really is a frenzy. I was popped over for a minute to annuities. Do not buy annuities. Don't buy variable annuities. Don't buy whole life insurance policies. It's all packed with foolishness. If you have to absolutely have to have life insurance, which, you know, you got to understand that the mortality charts are designed based on the likelihood of you dying before a certain age. So if you're in a low likelihood range, your rates are going to seem reasonable unless you're, you know, going to the wrong person. But still, in the long run, you know, the insurance company always comes out ahead. They always do. So in annuities, without getting into them, folks, it's super easy to put your money in them. It's impossible to get your money out. The fees are terrible. I mean, you can get it out, but I mean, you're just going to pay. And if you're in, get out now. Buy what God says to buy: precious metals, gold and silver, true wealth, what he calls true wealth, what he calls money. I mean, Jesus carried gold. He got gold, frankincense, and myrrh at his birth. There is so much reference to gold throughout all of heaven. I've discussed the fact that right after God discusses the creation of everything on earth, he goes straight to where there's gold, and then the economy of the earth begins, okay? Precious metals-based assets are the real deal. And what I'm saying is, what's going on right now is, I'll add this. The late 90s, we had the dot-com craze, right? Well, that went right up until when? Until September 11th of 2001, basically. Before 9/11, the market was already unraveling. Don't get me wrong. But some people see that as like, well, see, the two had nothing to do. No, I see it as even further evidence. See, it was already coming apart. That was part of the plan to keep all of this corruption. Who knows who was even involved? When you have over 100 of the largest Fortune 100, Fortune 200 companies, you have over half of them cooking the books, creating fake growth every year so that the investors will keep pouring their money in. They're all involved. It was so bad that Arthur Andreessen, the single largest accounting firm in the world, goes bankrupt and out of business after the Enron bust because it showed that they, the largest, most powerful accounting firm in the world, was knowingly cooking the books for Enron. You know, think about that. That tells you so much that they would go to that extent. That, and so what happened was they had to have a 9/11 to wipe out all the evidence in building World Trade Center building number 7. They wiped it all out. It was all gone. And the area of the Pentagon that got exploded also had the rest of a bunch of records that were designed never to be found again. The pictures of the bill where the aircraft supposedly went into the Pentagon is just impossible. They're pinholes compared to the size of a 747. Just do a photo overlay and you'll see what I mean. And just remember, folks, it led up to that. So where I'm going is this. We're playing with fire around our planet. It used to be that there was the welfare and the warfare parties, okay? First it was Republican and Democrat. Democrats were spending tax. Republicans were like limited government, limited spending. Let people do what they want with their money and let the economy run freely. Of course, over time, the left has won more and more. If our founders came up from their graves today and saw the economic system that we were using and had someone sit and explain to them, at first they'd say, no, you don't understand. It's this really neat system because, you know, there has to be an infinite money supply, da-da-da. And if they said, well, who made this? Well, a guy named John Maynard Keynes. Well, what was his motivation? Well, you know, I don't know. Well, what were his political beliefs? What did he believe? Oh, he was a hardcore radical left-wing Marxist socialist. And he said that this economic system was the necessary ingredient for Marxism to prevail. And he specifically said that it's designed to continuously confiscate the wealth of the people, of its citizens. It's designed to confiscate the wealth of the citizens secretly and unobserved without their knowing it. Think of the new tax plan, too, of Trump's. What did he do? Massive tax breaks to the high brackets. I mean, billionaires got their taxes cut in half. People at the bottom, the working class, simple, and I mean bottom, you know, they got a pretty good tax break. Everybody in the middle, everybody that owns a small business, all those people that are making the kind of money that makes America go around, the kind of money that provides jobs, all those people either saw their taxes stay the same or go up. I fall into that category. I provide jobs. My taxes went up. I couldn't even believe it when I talked to my accountant. I was like, and he knew it too because he knew how conservative I am and how hard I tried to get Trump into office because I just thought he'd be a brilliant businessman and I thought he'd be a lot less subjective. I assumed he'd just be, you know, all business all the time or whatever. I mean, he is what he is, right? And so basically, where we're at now today, in my opinion, is we're at a great buying opportunity. Precious metals-based assets have really, the value's there. They've already gone through the cycle. They've built the nice floor. They're on their way up. You know, and basically we're facing hyperinflation. We've got tons of currency that we've got to bring back home now that you get, you know, part of the reason the left puts these heavy taxes on money coming back into our country is because of a loss of control. If that money, if trillions of dollars comes back into our economy through the free market, you know, it gets freely passed. They cannot fleece the wealth, or at least immediately take the wealth of the American people away, which is what they want to do. That's why they've had big taxes against it. Trump, on the other hand, he's very, very, very liberal in his spending philosophies. I'm quite shocked, to be honest with you. And precious metals-based assets, folks, bottom line, they are the only long-term, solid, non-negotiable, never changed, never wrong, never lost their value, out there. And by the way, so I could go through all that, you know, the fact that they're anonymous and transportable, they've been around forever, they've always been there. You're just dealing with God's money. He says it is. Well, keep it that simple. He says it is. That's it. One other thing to drop into the show here. Reviews. If you want to go on Google, okay, you can call the shop to clarify. Give us a 5-star review on Google. We give you a Morgan Silver Dollar. If you give us 3 reviews, and you can call the store to find out where. I believe it's Google, Yahoo, and Yelp or something like that. We give you 2 ounces of silver or 2 Morgan Silver Dollars. 444-0044. Now, remember, all you got to do is go on Google, give us a 5-star review, call us, we'll verify it, and then we give you a free Morgan Silver Dollar. I mean, that's a pretty good deal. Think about it. We appreciate the reviews. It's the way the world works now. It's taken me some time to accept it, but I have to do it. So I know we've done, if you've done business with us over the years, we appreciate it. We thank you. If you can go just leave some positive experience on there or something good, I'd appreciate it. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.